Good morning, and may be seated. Justice Lanzinger is not able to be with us this morning, but she will be viewing your arguments and she'll be participating in the decisions of the cases that we argue. The first case is 07-895 and 07-912 in re LAB. Ms. Powell.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning, Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court, Mr. Cassay. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Watch your time there.
Thank you. In Ohio, the statutory right to counsel at any stage of the proceeding is the same under 2151-352. In this case, the question is the waiver of the right to counsel at any stage of proceeding the same? First, I'm going to address the waiver, and then I'm going to move on to the certified question. In CS, this court addressed the juvenile's right to counsel in a juvenile court proceeding, and this case is quite similar to CS. In this case, Lee, like CS, faced 8 years of incarceration at a juvenile prison. Like CS, the juvenile court quickly dispensed with Lee's right to counsel. And like CS, Lee's mother did not provide meaningful representation or give him advice about his decision to waive counsel. In CS, this court held that a child may waive his right to counsel subject to certain standards, so long as he is advised and counseled by his parent. And in CS, the court found that that if a child is not counseled or advised by his parent or guardian, he may not waive his right to counsel. In this case, there's nothing in the record that shows that Lee's mother advised him about his decision to waive counsel. And in fact, the record shows that mom lobbied for Lee to go to prison, and that at least suggests a conflict may have existed. Lee wasn't appointed a guardian ad litem, and Lee wasn't advised by an attorney about his decision to waive counsel before he waived counsel. Therefore, like CS, Lee shouldn't have been allowed to waive his right to an attorney.
You're talking about a stage that is equivalent to a probation revocation stage in the adult court at this time, aren't you?
I am.
You're not talking about the original dispositional hearing.
I'm not.
And when I did felony adult court as a trial judge, I always gave the admonitions at the time of sentencing, and I never gave admonitions or right to counsel speeches at the revocation hearing. So why do we have greater protections in a juvenile than we do in an adult if you're trying to do an adult comparison?
Thank you. Revised Code 2151-352 provides a stronger right to counsel than the Constitution. Interestingly, in adult land, Criminal Rule 32.3 does provide for a very stringent waiver of counsel according to Criminal Rule 44. We don't have
at a
that
revocation
same
hearing?
Yes. That's 32.3, which is what I'm talking about, a probation revocation hearing. I believe that rule governs revocation of community control, which is similar.
Unless the rules change since I've been a trial judge, I didn't. You maintain that in an adult revocation hearing, you also have to give another whole Rule 11 colloquy.
No. Rule 11 doesn't apply. And so maybe I'm mistaken because you're saying admonition and I'm thinking about the right to counsel being
strong. But you're
strong.
Still saying if I tell somebody your probation is revoked, I have to admonish them first. They have a right to counsel before I revoke their probation. That's what you're saying is required in adult court.
No, I'm not saying that. And I've never been in adult court, so I don't know.
Okay.
What I know is that the waiver of counsel shall be according to 44. Criminal Rule 44, whether that means an admonition, I have no idea. You certainly know that better than I, and I'm not going to stand up here and say that that's required. What I am going to say is that the right to counsel under 2151-352 is strong, and it's the same at every stage of the proceedings, and this court said that in CS. I think for when we're talking about special care and considerations that need to be given to children who are less likely to understand technical things, who are less likely to understand what's going on, especially very young children like Lee, who was 13, I think that it makes sense to give that admonition. And I think it also makes sense that waiver colloquy should be the same at every stage of the proceedings.
Well, Ms. Powell, let me approach this from a different standpoint. In our holding in CS, paragraph 2 of the syllabus references that in a delinquency proceeding, and then it talks about the right to counsel and the like of that.
Right.
But this is, as Justice Stratton points out, a proceeding after there has been an adjudication and a disposition. Isn't this a proceeding after judgment, and isn't it governed by Rule 35?
No question it's governed by 35. Also, no question that 35 standing alone isn't enough.
Your reference to CS doesn't talk about a proceeding after judgment. It talks about either the adjudicatory or the dispositional hearings.
Well, let me touch on one of the definitions of delinquency. And one of the definitions of delinquency is a child who has been found to have violated a valid court order under Chapter 2151 or Chapter 2152. And so a valid court order under 2152 in this case would have been, hey, Lee, you're on probation. Here are the the conditions you have to abide by. He's delinquent, and he was found delinquent by the juvenile court because he violated a valid court order. So he's certainly adjudicated delinquent. Whether this is an adjudication hearing, I think, remains to be seen, and that's certainly what's at issue here. An adjudication hearing is a hearing that determines whether a child's delinquent, which we know he's delinquent because he violated a court order.
I want to stop you there. Is there actually a finding that the child is delinquent because he has violated a court order, or is it just, is the issue he's essentially violated probation or court order, and therefore there's another sanction?
Well, we don't know. What I do know is that the form, the journal entry that the court filled out at the end of the hearing, and maybe even during the hearing, says that he's delinquent on count one. So there was a finding of delinquency. And again, delinquent is violating a valid court order. So I think the definition of delinquency sticks. I think there's an argument that the definition of adjudication sticks. I think there's no question that in CS, this court said that the waiver of the counsel, I'll just sort of quote, that there's a strong presumption against the waiver of counsel, that the juvenile court has a solemn duty to make a thorough inquiry and take necessary steps to ensure the fullest protection of the right to counsel at every stage of the proceedings. That's in CS. I don't see anything in that statement that suggests that this shouldn't apply to every stage of the proceedings, including a probation revocation.
Counsel, are you suggesting, as a look at your brief, are you suggesting that this inquiry needed to be done twice on the same day in the same hearing?
No.
Okay. Because it didn't the magistrate go right on to sentencing upon taking the admission of the child to the charge?
Yes. I think that it's fair. What didn't happen here is it wasn't made clear that he had right to counsel at every stage of the proceeding, including disposition. I think
so.
That
it's what the magistrate didn't say when the magistrate said you have the right to an attorney.
Right, and it's also that the magistrate started the hearing by saying this is a preliminary hearing on a probation violation. I don't think there was any recognition that this was going to move to him sitting on the bus at DYS in about 8 minutes, as was the case in CS. They told him right from the front, this is a preliminary hearing. I mean, I myself might not think I need an attorney for a preliminary hearing. It's just preliminary. That's assuming a 13-year-old knows what the word preliminary means. I don't think that there needs to be, we don't have to do these admonishments over and over and over again, and I think there's a case out of the Ninth District that gets that right, and that's SJ. If this disposition, you go right to disposition, then the admonishments at the beginning are enough because it's only a few minutes later. If there's a separate disposition hearing, certainly the child needs to be informed he has a right to counsel at disposition. Here, he didn't know he had right to an attorney at every stage. From the outset, he knew he had the right to an attorney at the preliminary stage.
So two mistakes were made in that opening statement. It's before the court for preliminary hearing on probation violation. That was actually wrong.
I think that's wrong.
And then when he went on to say, you have a right to be represented by a lawyer at any time, wouldn't that cover all of the phases? I mean,
Sure. It's kind of tricky, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
He's about this tall, and he's standing there with his mom, who doesn't want him anymore. And it's kind of tricky to say, oh, I told you you had a right to an attorney at any time. Hey, buddy, you didn't speak up. I mean, we know, and I cite this, I think, in my MISJ, the literature suggests that kids are very bad at overcoming sort of that authoritarian setting. They're not likely to assert their rights in the same way that an adult would. And so I think, sure, it passes. I told you. But then, aha, I get you. And I don't think that that's fair. I mean, certainly the rules require that this be fair. And due process requires that this be fair.
What would seem less fair? If a lawyer was there and the magistrate said this is a preliminary hearing, I would think the lawyer would be coming out of his or her chair when you went right on to disposition.
More likely, the lawyer would have said, hey, kid, remember I told you this is going to start as a preliminary hearing, but we're probably going to get this wrapped up right now. And I'm glad you brought that up. An attorney in this case would have been remarkably helpful. And that's not all, it doesn't always show up in the facts like this one. In this case, the probation officer recommended that Lee go to intensive probation. And mom lobbied that he go to prison. And had he had an attorney, and had he known he had an attorney for that dispositional phase, I think he might have chosen an attorney who's going to advocate against incarceration, against having him placed on the bus to DYS. I mean, that's the attorney would be a wonderful help in this case, especially. And if you recall, the court pressured him. What do you have to say? What do you have to say for yourself? Tell me why I shouldn't send you to DYS. And Lee said, I don't know.
Well,
attorney would come out of his chair at that point.
You're asking us to assume a lot of things that aren't in the record. Maybe he wanted to get away from mom. Maybe he wanted to get on the bus. I assume there's nothing in the record that tells us that that's not the case.
No, but I'm glad you brought that up as well. In CS, remember, CS wanted to go to prison to be with his brother, and that wasn't going to happen. And he wanted to get through with it. And this court said, despite his sort of knowing what he wanted, even though I think we all agree that wasn't a smart thing to want, the court still had to meet basic due process. And I'm not asking for a lot in this case. You have the rights of counsel at every stage of the proceedings. Hey, you're very young, and I see that you've never had an attorney before, dear. I see you've waived every time. Let me make sure you understand the right to an attorney. Let me make sure you understand what an attorney can do for you here, because I see the recommendation from the probation officers that you go to intensive probation. And I'll tell you what, buddy, I'm thinking you should get on that bus. I mean, say that at the beginning. And then dear can say, oh, man, I'm going to be on the bus at DYS. I better put on the brakes. So I think CS applies. I think that CS is clear that the right to counsel is the same at every stage of the proceedings, and that the waiver should be the same at every stage of the proceedings.
If CS applies, is there a need for us to even write anything more?
Yes. I think there's a need. You could write an opinion that just underlines every stage of the proceedings, but I think that it would certainly be what I'm imagining to say that CS applies at probation revocation hearings, and the waiver of the counsel is according to the totality of the circumstances test given in CS. I want to quickly address this.
Let me just, before you do that, we don't have to adopt your view or your argument that Rule 35 incorporates Rule 29, do we?
No. No. And to be honest, and we may have thought about this in our moods, it doesn't matter to me if you apply 29 or not. What's important about 29 is 29 embodies due process and embodies a lot of the things that were brought out in Gaul. So long as this court finds that 35 standing alone in a vacuum, like the court below and as the state thinks that it should, blind to due process, blind to the constitutional rights, that's not right. That's not enough. 35 standing alone is not enough. Sure, it gives us some guideposts, but I think that it makes sense, especially under Juvenile 1, which says we should ensure simplicity and uniformity. In a case cited by Mr. Cassay, filed yesterday, JG, you see that the 12th District Court of Appeal said 29 doesn't apply to probation revocation hearings, but let's go ahead and analyze this entry of admission according to 29, because it's easy, it's what we know, and it is due process.
But Ms. Powell, this was not Lee's first appearance in this court. I mean, we were there in February, March, April. couple of times in May, and now we're up to June.
Right.
So the mother's statement, I think you were callous in suggesting she wanted to get rid of him. I think her statement was, what the court had done previously wasn't working, and that's what she said.
Sure, and that's
she
fair.
She wanted a court to put some strength into its orders.
Right.
And contrary to your argument, at least as quoted in the brief, the court did say, you're not going home today. I'm going to send you there, and the bus is leaving. So I think there was some suggestion about that the court was ready to do something.
When parent can't offer dispositional alternatives or advocate for their kid, a guardian ad litem is appointed. And remember, CS doesn't require mom not to want what's best for her kid and not to know what's best for her kid. CS requires...
She may well have known what was best for him.
Sure, and I agree with that. And it's fair that she threw her hands up, but she wasn't in a position to advise him about his waiver of right to counsel. That's why CS is so important. And recall, he's never validly waived his right to counsel because his understanding given to him by the court in 2005 when he was 12 was if you're guilty, you don't need an attorney. If you're admitting, you're waiving counsel. And that's not knowing. That's not an accurate description of what counsel is. I see my time has expired.
Thank you, Ms. Powell. Mr. Cassay.
Richard Cassay, representing the state of Ohio in this case. Mr. Philip Bogdanoff, who has filed 99% of the papers in this case, has retired. Consequently, here I am. To answer one question that came up early on dealing with community control revocation hearings, the criminal rule states that the defendant has to be advised that he has the right to retain counsel, and that's all that rule says. Getting on to
drawing the analogy then between that rule to this rule, the right to retain counsel, obviously a child can't retain counsel. The court would appoint counsel for them. So where did the court go? Did the court go far enough in just saying you have the right to counsel, or should the court have explained to a child who really doesn't have much capability to understand what that means some more detail?
Well, let me make one concession here to the court. And I think maybe the Chief Justice touched on this. Under CS, in this particular case, in the LAB case, there was no representation, there was no advice, and there was no consultation, to paraphrase the syllabus holding of CS. So if that's all the farther the court needs to go, I would probably need to sit down right now. But I will not sit down and will continue, but I will make that concession. CS is not a pure probation violation case. It is an initial charge case. One of the cases that the court probably has not received yet, but I filed additional authority yesterday, which counsel for the minor is aware of. There have been three cases that have construed CS in the context of a probation violation hearing. One of them, thankfully or not, is from the Ninth District, and that's called In Re PF. And there, the court was cited CS, and they said very specifically, rightly or wrongly, that CS does not apply to probation violation hearings. There's another case, the name is escaping me, it might be JG. And that case, that was a probation violation hearing plus an original charge. So it was a dual situation like CS was. And there the court, insofar as it dealt with the probation violation aspect of the case, applied the syllabus of CS that I conceded might be a problem for the state of Ohio in this particular case. So you know, there's some indication there is still a conflict out there, besides the initial conflict that prompted this court to grant certification.
So, with if I'm understanding what you have indicated with respect to this specific case, since there was a new charge of delinquency, with respect to that, CS would apply, is the way you read the state of the law right now. But you need, or the universe of folks dealing with this, need an answer as to whether or not CS applies to revocation hearings.
Yes. There's no question as far as the initial charge adjudicatory hearing is concerned. Then CS is going to apply to that.
And there was one of those involved in this particular hearing?
There was not an initial charge at issue in the hearing of June 8th, 2006, Your Honor. That was a pure probation violation hearing.
Okay.
Yes. His initial charge, this particular minor actually had three charges lodged against him through the course of from 05 through June of 06. The initial charge was burglary, then we had an assault, then we had a receiving stolen property, and they all kind of got conglomerated together, and the two new charges were rolled into the probation on the initial burglary charge. So when we come then to the June 06 hearing, that's really at issue. Those other things are part and parcel of the probation that he violated.
Well, he's not a sympathetic person, certainly, but the consequences for him of this hearing, the disposition of the matter, were every bit as severe, you might say, as if this was the original disposition hearing on whether he is a delinquent, weren't they? He's sent off to DYS.
The potential penalty remained the same, Mr. Chief Justice.
So why shouldn't his rights remain the same?
Well, as an abstract matter, I could agree with you that they should, but I'm here to try to argue to the court that what the law on one area is not necessarily the law on the other. But as an abstract matter, you know, I have no problem with your statement. Interestingly, it's amazing what you can see when you actually read a rule. If you look at Rule 35, the rule that deals with specifically probation revocation hearings, and compare it to Juvenile Rule 29, which deals, in the state's view, with initial charge case hearings. Criminal Rule 29 requires the court not only to advise the minor of the right to counsel, but to determine if the minor is waiving the right to counsel. Now, for some reason, Criminal Rule 35 has no language in it that requires the court to determine if the minor is waiving counsel. It simply says that the party shall have the right to counsel and the right to appointed counsel were entitled pursuant to Juvenile Rule 4A, period. There's nothing in there that says, court, you have to determine if this juvenile is waiving counsel. Now, I don't necessarily mean by that the waiver of counsel goes out the window in probation revocation hearings. But I point that out merely to indicate that there is some distinction drawn in the juvenile rules in this state between the initial hearings and the probation revocation hearings.
What do you contend is sufficient advice under Rule 29 at a probation revocation hearing on the issue of counsel?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
What do you contend is sufficient language or sufficient advice to a juvenile under Rule 29?
Under Rule 29?
I'm sorry, under a probation revocation hearing.
Well, the answer of the Ninth District Court of Appeals, I'll give you that first, is that the juvenile has to be told of his right to counsel, period. And if the juvenile says, I don't want an attorney, that's the end of it.
Is the difference between your position and appellant's position that they believe that you need to determine whether it's knowingly, voluntarily, et cetera, whereas your position is you just have to advise they have the right?
They have to be advised that they have the right. I think the murkiness comes in, and the law isn't clear to me either, Your Honor, what exactly has to be told to effectuate a valid waiver. I think in general what trial courts are trying to do is look at the person in front of them, be they a minor or be they an adult, and determine whether or not they understand that they have this right to counsel and whether or not they're voluntarily, knowingly, and intelligently waiving it. That's where the CS factor test comes in. Now, if the court gets past the language that I conceded at the beginning of my argument, if the court gets past that and looks at that factor test, I think there are 10 of them, then I think in this case, LAB, those factors were met. I can stand here and read them off to you, but then it's, you know, the court knows them as well as I do. But it would be the state's position that under the totality of the circumstances, this was a valid waiver. His age, he was almost 14. His experience, this was his fifth probation violation. The language, I think this is important, the language used by the court in explaining his rights. Now, this brings up a sub-point. If we're even talking about Juvenile Rule 29, the colloquy, you can go through this transcript in the June 06 hearing, and in my opinion, the magistrate listed, went through every single right that Juvenile Rule 29 talks about with the exception of one. And that was, the magistrate did not tell this minor that a record would be made of the proceedings. Now, I don't think that's particularly harmful because, in fact, we do have a record of it. So if we apply that multi-factor test, I think you have a valid waiver. There's nothing to indicate that this particular minor was disabled mentally. No emotional problems appear of the record.
Well, the child didn't know he had a right to object to the magistrate's recommendation.
Well, that brings up the sub-argument the minor is making, yes. To address that, I simply need to say that what the minor wants the court to do is completely rewrite the rule and engraft a requirement that to have a valid waiver, as I understand the argument, is we don't even, besides going through this factor test in CS, then we have to tell the minor that, by the way, you have the right to file objections, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That simply isn't in the rule. I think Mr. Bogdanoff was correct when he said in his brief that is a matter for this court's rulemaking authority if the court thinks that's advisable, but certainly to start rewriting the rule now, the state doesn't feel that would be appropriate. In any event, that particular issue was not raised in the Court of Appeals, and it would be the state's primary argument that is now forfeited. There was no indication that in the Court of Ninth District Court of Appeals from the minor that the juvenile rule had to be rewritten to engraft the Juvenile Rule 40 warning besides. And there's no requirement that anybody be advised of the right, of the obligation to file objections. So not only do they want you to rewrite the rule, they want you to make a special exception for a minor. And I'm sure counsel will say we're minors or don't really understand too much of anything. I don't know if that's true or not. That's a matter of debate. looking at CS, there is some language in it that leads me to think that it may not apply directly or all the time, not all the time, that it will apply directly to probation violation hearings. I'm looking at paragraph 111. Juvenile Rule 29 applies in waiver of counsel and in acceptance of admission. Paragraph 85, this case applies the statute 2151352, which the court drew the language from, and the requirements from Juvenile Rule 29. So there is some murkiness is not the right word, but it's the only word that's coming into my mind right now. So I'll use it with no offense to anybody. There is an issue whether or not CS applies to probation and revocation hearings. As I've indicated, subsequent to CS, two courts of appeals have taken the opposite approaches, so that conflict remains. So it's an issue that needs to be clarified. But, and I will reiterate this one more time and sit down. If the court gets beyond that syllabus language, then it's the state's position that there was a valid waiver. And in that respect, I would ask that the Ninth District be affirmed. If there are no further questions, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cassay. Ms. Powell, you've used your time, but you may take 30 seconds.
Thank you, Your Honor.
In looking at the adult rule, I stand corrected because there is the requirement to advise of the right to counsel, but you're maintaining that in the juvenile setting, that simple advising they have the right to counsel is not sufficient. Is that correct? You're saying you require the full colloquy to understand what that means. Is that your position? Do I have that
kids
accurate?
Need more. Okay. Kids need more. I'm not asking this court to write a new rule, and I wrote these propositions of law before CS was decided, and I would write them differently today. Totality of the circumstances test sticks, and this is a complex stage of the proceedings because it was before a magistrate, and I stand by that. Galt warned that departures from established principles of due process lead not to enlightened procedure, but to arbitrariness, and I'm troubled by this gotcha mentality. Hey, buddy, we told you you had a right to counsel at every stage. Hey, CS, you know, we know you want to go off with your brother, but too bad. Hey, Lee, you know, I mean, this is this gotcha mentality, and it doesn't serve justice. It doesn't serve kids' interests. It doesn't help them feel that ownership of justice that they're so deserving of. The right to counsel is the same at every stage of the proceedings. The waiver should be as knowing, as intelligent, and as voluntary at this stage as it is at any other stage.
Counsel, what's your experience with the appointment or the presence of counsel at these hearings in maybe other jurisdictions or other cases? Do you have any anecdotal anything to offer?
I don't stand in trial courts. I'm an appellate attorney, but I read a lot of transcripts. And more often than not, especially now, we see the presence of an attorney generally at hearings where a kid's about to be shipped. They may not have had an attorney at their admission. They may only have had an attorney at their disposition in some districts, in some jurisdictions. But generally speaking, if the kid's facing 8 years, and a very young child especially is facing this much time away from mom, there's going to be an attorney there. I would think, especially if one of the people in the room is advocating against incarceration. That's so important.
Are you suggesting that we imply or impose a Criminal Rule 11 type admonishment or advisement at the delinquency stage and then at the adjudicatory stage and again at any revocation hearing, three times in a juvenile proceeding in every case?
Criminal Rule
CS to say that?
Criminal Rule 11 and Juvenile Rule 29 are very similar. CS says that. And I think that those admonishments are meaningful guideposts, and I think CS also says that. Any time that there's a waiver, and I suppose I accept my opponent's concession on that point, we want to make sure kids understand.
So you want three admonishments in every case?
Anytime the kid's in court, he has a right to an attorney.
Is that a yes
anytime
or a no?
He waives.
Is that a yes or a no?
Yes, anytime he waives. It's important that there's that admonishment.
And I guess the corollary follows on that. If the parent isn't there to advise, then the court must appoint an attorney in order for the child to voluntarily waive counsel at a revocation hearing?
Yes, unless there's counsel provided to advise, or unless there's a guardian ad litem to advise on that issue. Yes.
Thank you, Ms. Powell.
Thank you.
The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.